Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, December 18th, 2020. Section A, Election. Katie Joyner says she's up for job of school board rep in District 4. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. In reflecting on her Midland ISD school board win, Katie Joyner talked about the opportunity. Specifically, Joyner talked about the opportunity to represent the people of District 4 as the next board starts with a clean slate. Those new members will be briefed today on the superintendent's search. She considers that important task of selecting the new chief executive of the district as a reason she was excited to participate in this cycle of MISD elections. Joyner talked about the opportunity to be in the unique position to bring in a superintendent at the beginning of a term and having the ability to make an immediate impact. She will have the opportunity because she defeated Steve Vargas in a runoff on Tuesday, collecting 55% of the 480 votes, according to the unofficial results on the Midland City Council Election Office website. District 4 starts in Central Midland near Bowie Fine Arts Academy and works its way across the city, picking up neighborhoods around Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy, Midland Alternative Program, Lamar Elementary, Long Elementary, Burnett Elementary, and then works its way into the Southwest Midland and into the county. Joyner finished second in the three-person race for the position on November 3rd, but a runoff was required as Vargas did not acquire the 50% plus one vote needed to claim the seat. Joyner called the opportunity to participate in a runoff a little bit of a blessing. Finishing second during the general election made possibility of defeat real, and at the same time it was a new race. You know where you stand, Joyner said. After November 3rd, she had her gut check and more determination to work hard. We were not presuming any voters were ours, Joyner said. She talked about the gravitas that comes with winning an elected position, how the voters showed their trust in her, and how she is ready for the opportunity to be a person they trusted. It was a humbling experience to have people willing to put their faith in you, Joyner said. I know how big the job is. Joyner becomes one of two women elected to Midland's three highest-profile boards, the school district, city, and the county. Joining Citywoman Councilman Lori Belong, Joyner believes her win was important as half the population was not represented on the board the last 4 years, even while women are such a large part of the MISD workforce and make up significant positions on education associations across the city. Joyner also appreciated the victory celebration more this week as the mother of two daughters. Running a campaign isn't easy, and there were uncomfortable times and teachable moments along the way. A campaign, she said, offered a chance to show the importance of having a voice and working hard. It offered a chance to be a role model for her daughters. Being able to participate in the democratic process is a privilege, she said. Midland Health begins vaccinating employees. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Midland Health received 1,950 doses of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine Thursday morning, and staff immediately began administering those vials to hospital workers. The excitement of Midland Health officials was palpable as President and CEO Russell Myers announced during Thursday's Unified Command Team briefing that the vaccine arrived that morning, a few days after the state began distributing it. This is the single most important event I think we've had since this pandemic began, he said, which is the availability of a vaccine that we know works and can be widely distributed as soon as it's available. Like the flu vaccine, staff will not be required to get the vaccine, Myers said. He said about one-third of the hospital workers have signed up to receive the vaccine in the first round. There's understandable hesitancy on some people's part. This is still issued under the emergency use authorization, and testing and improving of the vaccine is ongoing. But initial data indicates the vaccine is effective with little risk for an adverse reaction. There have been only a few reported cases of allergies to the vaccine after its rollout in the United Kingdom. Hospital officials will be administered the vaccine on camera to convey confidence in it. He said they hope that most hospital employees will opt to receive the vaccine at some point because about 85% choose to get the flu vaccine. It's pretty human, I think, not to want to be the first one to take a new drug. I fully believe that as we do this in a very visible way, when our people get the next round of opportunities to sign up, they will. I'm absolutely confident in that. He said at least 100 doses will be administered on Thursday, and they will be staggering distribution of the remaining vials over the next few days in anticipation of some employees needing a day off afterward. There have been reports of some people briefly experiencing fatigue or fever as they develop antibodies to the virus. Because many hospital staff have chosen not to get the vaccine in the first round, Midland Health is giving other health providers in the community the option to receive some doses. He said nursing home workers will not be included in that because the state is sending vials to nursing homes separately. We're going to get this distributed as widely as we can, especially to people who are giving care of all kinds throughout our community. State lifts business restrictions on Midlands region by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Midlands region is no longer among those across the state where COVID patients have made up 15% of the total hospital capacity over the last 7 days. And that means, according to Governor Greg Abbott's executive order, that businesses in Midland, Odessa, and across the region can go back to 75% occupancy. The Department of State Health Services reported Thursday that the percentage of COVID patients as a part of the total hospital capacity did jump more than 1%, but the move from 13.6 to 14.6 was below the 15%. Now, according to the governor's order, it would take 7 straight days with a percentage above 15% for restrictions to go back into effect. The region includes the cities of Midland and Odessa and the counties of Andrews, Brewster, Crane, Ector, Glasscock, Howard, Jeff Davis, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Presidio, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, and Winkler. The conditions have improved, according to Midland Health President and CEO Russell Myers. The number of rooms dedicated to COVID patients in the ICU and COVID floors are down, and Myers said that hospital officials are talking about reinstituting elective inpatient surgeries. It's important that we give people the opportunity to have the surgeries that have been put off the board for several weeks, especially as we near the end of the year. We know this is a very common time for people to try to work on surgery that's got a high out-of-pocket cost to them before their deductible resets in January. We want to be sensitive to that and to support our surgeons getting that work done before the year's end. Myers also said hospital officials will evaluate making visitation easier for all patients and families. Hopefully we can do that beginning next week as well. The Midland Health website on Thursday showed 258 of the 295 inpatient rooms inside Midland Memorial are occupied. Myers said seasonal respiratory disease is the reason for the higher numbers, but the number of COVID patients in CCU is 24, and the number of COVID in the COVID ward is 70. There are also fewer people testing at Midland Health sites. Through Wednesday, there had been 611 people tested. That is behind the pace set the last 4 weeks. Myers said there were opportunities for same-day testing at one of Midland Health's two locations, something not available during busier times. Also, MMH will expand its testing criteria because of the increased capacity. We want to encourage people who need an antigen test to be cleared to travel. You may now call 68-NURSE and get an appointment for the test. We've not been doing those to this point. We do have that capacity, so we would encourage you to do that, as well as if you've had a household contact that was previously ineligible for testing. More staff will be added to the 68-NURSE line to cut down on the wait times for those calling. Trinity finds new ways to give back amid the pandemic by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hearstmp.com. Trinity school students and faculty have found different ways to give back to the community during the pandemic. This is the 16th year for Operation Bless the Children. Families fill up backpacks for Hope Invasion Ministry that distributes the bags to students in Mexico. First grade teacher Terry Miller organizes the initiative every year, and her students help load backpacks for travel. Upper school students created canvases for hospice patients, hosted a clothing and duffel bag drive for fostering restoration, and a toy drive for centers of children and families. Kobe Lincoln, Director of Institutional Advancement, said the Student Council will be donating $500 in gift cards to housekeeping staff at Midland Memorial Hospital. Impact Club held a drive for the Field's Edge. The student group that collected the most toiletries would win a no-uniform day. Many of the things we usually do, like going to sing at the soup kitchen or visiting nursing homes to sing Christmas carols, aren't happening this year, she said. The Operation Bless the Children is something we do every year, but we have shifted our focus more to drives or through letter writing because in-person volunteering is so limited right now. Servant leadership is a pillar of the mission of Trinity School, so it is a major focus in all grades. Middle school students wrote letters to residents in nursing homes as opposed to visiting in person. Tuesday was the third year that the school has partnered with the Trinity Charger Alliance, the Parents Association, to host Pajama Day to collect pajamas. This year, Pajama Day will benefit Casa de Amigos and look a little different from previous years. Usually, the upper school students walk through the campus singing carols and acting as elves collecting the pajamas, but the school isn't allowing the cohorts to mix. The school chose Casa de Amigos this year because the nonprofit serves a variety of groups, from little kids in their school programs to senior citizens. The school selects a nonprofit every year that has a need for pajamas. The first year, it benefited High Sky, and last year, we did Buckner Children's Home. We give students the opportunity to wear a pair of pajamas that are appropriate, and in exchange for that, they bring a pair of pajamas to donate. Through Operation Bless the Children, 276 filled backpacks and $2,721 were donated for Hope Invasion. On Pajama Day, almost 500 pairs of pajamas were collected in sizes ranging from infant to adult for Casa de Amigos. Catch MFB's The Nutcracker Reimagined on the big screen by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstmp.com. The Midland Festival Ballet's presentation of The Nutcracker will look different this year, but there are multiple opportunities to view the performance. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center will be hosting two live events and one live streamed event this weekend. John Wolfe will be performing at Dos Amigos, while the Reed Southall Band will be performing at Rusty Bucket Barbecue. The Nutcracker Reimagined will be showing at Big Sky Drive-In at 7:30 p.m. today. The 27th annual production of The Nutcracker was produced locally by Film Hunter Media. The film features local dancers from the Midland Festival Ballet and narration by character Air Drosselmeyer. Tickets are available at MidlandFestivalBallet.org. Other showings include Basin PBS at 8 p.m. Wednesday and through WebLink through December 31st. Stillwater, Oklahoma-based Reed Southall Band will be performing at the Rusty Bucket BBQ and Tavern today. The band released Borrowed Time in 2017 with singles like Don't Tell Me and Why, which made it to the top 10 on several streaming charts. Tickets are $25 and can be purchased at bit.ly/2G87CT8. John Wolfe will be at Dos Amigos on Saturday. The country singer from Tulsa has released the singles Airport Kiss, Any Night in Texas, and Baby This and Baby That. Tickets are $15 in advance or $20 at the door. Moscow Ballet's Great Russian Nutcracker Christmas will be streamed on Saturday night through video on demand. The performance is usually at the WNPAC, but due to the coronavirus pandemic, the ballet troupe isn't traveling. Tickets are on sale at WagnerNoel.com. Ticket purchasers will have the video accessible in their marquee TV account at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Now is also the time to view Christmas lights in the area. Moore's Limo Service is giving rides around Midland and Odessa neighborhoods, while Odessa is hosting a Merry and Bright Window Nights downtown display. Merry and Bright Window Nights downtown is happening in downtown Odessa until January 3rd. Businesses, organizations, and families have decorated storefronts and windows located downtown for the month of December. Want a ride in style? Moore's Limo Service will be having their fourth annual Midland Odessa Christmas Lights Tour in limos. Live shows every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday will feature Christmas characters, hot cocoa, apple cider, and more. Ticket purchasers can choose from the Grassland Estates Tour, Emerald Forest Estates Tour, and Starbright Village Tour. To purchase tickets, visit mooreslimoservice.com. View lights from the sky during CAF's Christmas Lights Night Flights, which will continue until Wednesday. For more information, visit highskywing.org. Odessa's Starlight Village is open for cars, and walking attendees are also able to walk through the display at McKinney Park. The display, with over 300,000 lights, will also feature the new Crystal Tunnel. People in cars will be able to tune into a radio station for holiday music. The lights display will open 7 to 11 p.m. until January 1st. Big Spring is hosting the Comanche Trail Festival of Lights until December 25th. The Comanche Trail Festival of Lights features over 1 million lights with a gift shop and Santa visits. The free event is from 6 to 10 p.m. at 100 Whipkey Drive in Big Spring. WTFB Midland Location, Preparing New Gardens by Patty Edgar, Permian Basin Master Gardener. Have you driven by the West Texas Food Bank's Midland location lately and wondered what was going on? Well, what you're seeing is the construction of a new innovative gardens and additional parking space. I'm the gardener for the WTX Food Bank in both Midland and Odessa. Let me take you on a quick tour around our new garden addition. The new gardens will include a classroom slash meeting space in the cute white building, fruit trees, blueberries, and blackberries, a perennial garden for pollinators, a perennial garden to showcase drought-tolerant, sun-loving plants, garden beds that will accommodate walkers or wheelchairs, a grape arbor, two biodomes, space-age-looking greenhouses, and 14 vegetable beds. The fruit trees will include apples, figs, peaches, pears, persimmons, pomegranates, and citrus. These trees will grow in the ground with the exception of the citrus trees. The citrus trees will live in pots that we will move into the biodomes during our colder months. The blueberries will also live in pots because of the harsh West Texas climate. Blueberries can be a productive plant with some attention to their soil and water requirements. The blackberries will be part of the perennial pollinator garden, where they will get a lot of interest from the bees and other pollinators, and in turn provide a lot of yummy berries for human consumption. The pollinator garden will not only feed our bees, butterflies, etc., but will also include some edible plants to show how landscapes can produce food. The edibles will change with the seasons and should be an interesting addition to a basic landscape. The Sun Lovers Perennial Garden will display some of the plants that do well in our arid region, but will still look good as well. We will be using a layered approach with trees, shrubs, grasses, and ground covers. Birds really appreciate an environment like this for nesting and eating the occasional insect pest. The grape arbor will feature table grapes rather than grapes for winemaking, but the growing process is basically the same. Grapes can be a challenge in this area, but with some care and attention, they should flourish. Our two biodomes will provide a more tropical environment for banana trees and other tropical fruits and vegetables. The raised beds and the beds for the elderly, disabled, will allow us to build healthy soil for a seasonal array of delicious vegetables and herbs throughout the year. Spring of 2021 will be a fun, busy, and exciting time for our new gardens, so please come by and see what's going on. COVID cases down 45.3% compared to the top of the spike, from staff reports. The number of cases through Wednesday of this week is more than 12% lower than last week, and the lowest through Wednesday going back to late October. The Midland Health Department reported on Thursday there were 382 unconfirmed cases on Sunday through Wednesday. That number is 12.8% lower than the 438 confirmed cases last week and a 45.3% drop versus the number of cases on November 15th through 19th. The 382 cases also are the least since October 25th through 28th, before the November spike. The city of Midland shows that cases this week are also on pace to allow for the fourth straight non-holiday week decline. Overall, the city of Midland reports 12,092 total cases during the pandemic. Confirmed cases are those in which patients have been contacted by the Midland Health Department to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines. Going back to November 21st, there are 16 days when case numbers haven't been updated. City officials expect that number to drop as more staff have been added to health department efforts to confirm cases. Unconfirmed case information is being released to the public in an effort to provide residents more insight into how the virus is affecting the community on a daily basis. The city reported 105 unconfirmed cases Wednesday, a drop of 31% compared to the previous Wednesday. The city also reported this 173rd COVID-related death during the pandemic. A woman in her 60s with underlying health conditions died Wednesday. She was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. 18-year-old charged in shooting death, from staff reports. An 18-year-old man is being held on a murder charge in connection with a shooting death that occurred Monday night, according to a press release from the city's spokeswoman. Payne Stewart Reyes was pulled over for a traffic stop at about 12:30 p.m. Thursday in the 700 block of Douglas Avenue. The Midland Police Department canine officer found Reyes to be in possession of narcotics and a firearm, according to the release. He was transported to the Midland Police Department for questioning, but refused to speak to detectives. As the investigation continued, Reyes was positively identified as the person involved in the shooting of Santonio D. Griffin, according to the release. Griffin died at Midland Memorial Hospital late Monday night after sustaining a gunshot wound to the chest. Officers were dispatched to MMH in reference to Griffin's injuries shortly after officers responded to a shots fire call at DK Convenience Store on West Scarborough Drive.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, December 18, 2020. Carols at the Cross. Odessa businessman John Bushman speaks about the meaning of Christmas Thursday afternoon at the 40-foot cross that sits along State Highway 191. Students from five Odessa elementary schools, their parents and teachers were in attendance. Permian High School graduate Damian Christian, music minister at St. Andrew Cumberland Presbyterian Church in Odessa, led the group in singing Christmas songs. More photos may be seen at MRT.com and in a future edition. Communities and Schools Receives Grant. Texas Mutual Insurance Company has awarded $50,000 in grant funding to communities and schools of the Permian Basin as part of the company's more than $2.8 million commitment for workforce development initiatives across the state. The grant was awarded to CIS Permian Basin to ensure at-risk students have access to basic needs, mental health resources, and education tools that keep them engaged during the pandemic, according to a press release from the company. Miss Casey's giving away free ornaments. Miss Casey's Wonderland will not be having personal visits from Santa Claus this year. Instead, free Christmas ornaments will be given to boys and girls, co-owner Becky McCraney said. The ornaments will be available until the store runs out, but there is an ample supply, co-owner Becky McCraney said. Parents or kids can ask for the free ornaments, and it can be personalized with names, she said. Miss Casey's Wonderland, 1012 Andrews Highway, is open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday. Drive-through holiday parade set for Saturday. The Midland County Public Library and Midland County Sheriff's Office are hosting a drive-through holiday parade 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday at the Horseshoe parking lot. The event will allow spectators to view stationary parade floats from their vehicles. Parade participants will remain with their float and not gather with others during the event, according to a press release from the county. Traffic will be restricted to one way only with spectators entering the parking lot from Garfield Street and exiting onto the Interstate 20 service road. Library has Wizard of Oz, Route 66 exhibits. The Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch is hosting Wizard of Oz educational exhibit through Saturday, and the downtown branch will display America's Road, the journey of Route 66 through January 4. The Oz exhibit is based on the Warner Brothers film and features movie elements such as Dorothy's Ruby Slippers, Munchkin Land, The Witch's Castle, and Emerald City, according to a press release from MCPL. America's Road includes photographs, large-scale replicas, and panels, and an original 1965 Ford Mustang that is parked inside the walkway near the library entrance. The 2,448-mile stretch of asphalt crosses through 8 states, from the Midwest to the Pacific Coast, and draws thousands of travelers each year. The exhibits will be cleaned multiple times a day, and visitors must wear masks or face coverings. The branches are open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. weekdays and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturdays. Firefighters doing virtual fill the boot. The International Association of Firefighters and Professional Firefighters Association of Midland Local 4405 are doing a virtual fill the boot, which will take the place of the annual in-person campaign for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Instead of placing donations in boots held up by Midland firefighters at intersections across Midland, residents can donate at https://filltheboot.donordrive.com/participant/Midland. The virtual campaign continues through the end of the year, said Greg Wells with Midland Local 4405. Their goal is $5,000, according to the website. Midland Health has 2 testing sites. Midland Health has received funding from the city that will allow COVID-19 testing at 2 sites, Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus and MLK Junior Community Center. The West Campus testing site will operate 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays. The MLK Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, will operate 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. weekdays. Anyone who has been exposed or is symptomatic can call 68 Nurse, 686-8773, to make an appointment at the drive-through testing site. The test is free for those who are scheduled. Insurance information will be collected from those who are insured.
Obituaries and death notices. Joanne Cook, 87, of Stanton, passed away Wednesday, December 16th, at her residence. Memorial services will be at 4 p.m. Saturday, December 19th, at the First United Methodist Church. The service will live stream at www.stantonumc.com. John Clyde Nichols suddenly broke the tape, crossing the finish line to his earthly race on Monday, December 14th. A celebration of life service is planned for 11 o'clock a.m. on Monday, December 21st, at Sovereign Grace Church, located in Midland. To honor John's life in a special way, send your donations to West Texas Victors, Box 5137, Midland, 79704. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. On Tuesday, December 15th, Mona Sue Yoakum, loving mother to 3 children, passed away at the age of 85 at her home in Rankin. Graveside services will be held at the Rankin Cemetery at 3 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th. Robert Bob Lewis Halverson passed away peacefully December 15th. A private family burial ceremony is planned. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations could be made to the Midland Memorial Foundation or Manor Park, Inc. Victor Gregory Mays of Midland passed away on December 12th due to complications of COVID. A memorial mass will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, December 18th at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Interment will follow in the Memorial Garden Columbarium Courtyard of St. Anne's. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Emma Lee Slauson, 82, of Midland, passed away December 11th. Service is pending for a later date with Nally Pepper and Wise Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Giovanni Pantoja, 25, of Odessa, passed away December 12th. Viewing will be from 8 o'clock a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, December 18th at Nally Pecan and Wash Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, December 19th at Nally Pecan and Wash Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, December 18th, 2020. Section A. 50% capacity ordinance ends today. Hospitalizations down. Experts say keep wearing masks, by Federico Martinez. A controversial ordinance limiting Odessa businesses to 50% capacity will end today, but employees and customers will continue to be required to wear mask coverings inside businesses or face up to $250 fines for each infraction, city officials announced during a Thursday press conference with health officials. Odessa's Director of Communications, Devin Sanchez, said business capacity will revert back to 75% as recommended by CDC guidelines. As far as I know, the mask requirement will remain in effect indefinitely, Sanchez said. Mayor David Turner, who usually represents the city at the weekly COVID-19 press conferences, did not participate Thursday. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan Thursday said the face mask covering mandate should remain in effect until Ector County's test positivity rate decreases to 5-10%. That rate has hovered around 30-40% recently, officials said. Turner and Commissioners Dewey Bryant and Michael Shelton were defeated in Tuesday's runoff election and will be replaced in January by new mayor Javier Hoven, Denise Swanner, the new at-large council member, and another newcomer, Mark Mata, who will represent District 1. County and city health officials said they will make it a priority to work with elected officials to encourage them to continue to support the city's efforts to keep COVID-19 rates low. We need to continue to impress upon our leaders the need to continue following guidelines and preventative practices, Saravanan said. His comments were echoed by Medical Center Hospital System CEO Russell Tippin and Ector County Health Authority Dr. B.A. Ginadu. MCHS reported that Thursday they were housing 80 COVID-19 patients, 23 who are in critical condition and 21 on ventilators. 30 employees are currently off work due to COVID, a huge drop for us, Tippin said. ORMC reported 31 COVID-19 patients Thursday, 15 in critical care and 7 on ventilators. Tippin and ORMC CEO Stacy Brown said they are expecting the first vaccine shipments to arrive December 21st and will begin vaccinating staff immediately. Nursing home residents will then begin to be vaccinated. Both hospitals are still working on when and how vaccinations will be distributed to the general public. Tippin said he has been inundated with calls from the public seeking to be vaccinated. He noted the earliest public vaccinations could likely start in February or March. Ginadu said the county plans to coordinate the general public vaccination plans. The county will be taking a leadership role in this effort, said Ginadu, who noted he will soon begin talking to MCHS and ORMC about the issue. We need to start talking about planning for public distribution. Empty Stocking and Angel Tree come through. Annual fund drive remains $66,000 short of goal, by Michael Bauer. The holidays are in full swing, and that included the Odessa Salvation Army's annual Angel Tree and Empty Stocking distribution Thursday morning at its location at 810 East 11th. This is where all the toy drives that have come together for the year, where the partnership with the Odessa American and the Empty Stocking and United Supermarkets come together for us to put these toys together for these kids, Odessa Salvation Army Co-Captain Juan Gomez said. The program helps provide families in need of Christmas presents for their children and with a food box. The Empty Stocking Fund ends today, and the goal of $100,000 is short, about $66,000. Each of these toys are specific to the families who sent in a request, Gomez said. It really is an opportunity for us to share that Christmas opportunity with these families. Like with everything else that's been going on in 2020, this year's Angel Tree distribution was set up a little different due to the safety precautions to avoid COVID. In the past, the Angel Tree distribution would take place inside the Odessa Salvation Army's gym, where they would distribute items. This year, to comply with social distancing, the distribution was done in a drive-by format, where volunteers at the Salvation Army loaded items into the cars of families. Gomez said about 300 families had signed up and came through on Thursday, and boxes of food were also provided as well. Today, what we have is we have some food boxes that are going out to the families, Gomez said. We have over 250 food boxes for families that will be going out. A partnership with the West Texas Food Bank helped provide the 250 boxes of food, while the Salvation Army provided another 100. While this year's distribution is different from in the past, Gomez says the Odessa Salvation Army is still hopeful of getting its Christmas message across like in past Decembers. We're telling them what the real reason for the season is, Gomez said. It's not about the gifts. It's about remembering and being with family and fellowship during Christmas time. This year has been challenging for many families across the country, including here in the Permian Basin, with the pandemic affecting nearly all aspects of life, including the economy. Gomez says those struggles have been felt at the Odessa Salvation Army, which includes the number of volunteers. It's been a little difficult, Gomez said. Over the past 3.5 weeks, it's become the push of us getting the stuff in the bags and the toys and organizing them the way they came in. We haven't had many volunteers who have been able to come in and help out. It was my wife, our staff, and our children who were able to put that together. Not having those volunteers was a struggle. Another item that's been a factor has been finances. Our empty stocking is not where it was last year, Gomez said. Our Red Kettle campaign is about $400 down this year from last year. There are some worries in the back of my mind. I worry with how things will look, especially as we went out and bought things for Thursday. However, Gomez knows that their main focus is still on the children and families. Once we're done with that, then we'll worry about how to recover from the funds that haven't come in yet, Gomez said. According to Gomez, about 15 volunteers were able to help out with the distribution Thursday. In the past, they've had about 35 to 40 volunteers. The biggest thing is we're having to do something that is completely mobile and dependent on everyone coming and going at the right time and with less volunteers, he said, of the challenges of Thursday's distribution. One of the volunteers there was Christy Corrales. We're just here for the children and the families who, of course, need help this season with everything that's been going on with the virus and the economy, Corrales said. For several years, we've adopted an angel off the tree. Throughout Odessa, when we find a tree, we'll pick an angel. We brought in our donation for our angel and asked if they were taking any volunteers because we wanted to help. Odessa Salvation Army Co-Captain Clara Gomez said there were volunteers from around the area, including some from other businesses. Halliburton came out to help us today, and we have some regular volunteers, Gomez said. We're doing about 50 families every 30 minutes. So far, things have been good. We're hoping things can go as smoothly as possible. JP's work ethics questioned. Home builder says officials have been unavailable since spring. By Bob Campbell. The owner of an Odessa multifamily home construction company told Ector County Commissioners Thursday that the county's four justices of the peace, JPs, have been unavailable since the pandemic started in March, and that he has urgent business that he has been prevented from transacting. Keith Antilly of Keith Antilly Homes said after the meeting that a number of people living in his homes had not paid rent for several months. "They're just squatting," he said. Antilly had told the commissioners at the 10 a.m. session that the JP's doors have been closed and their phones don't answer. "They have not been to work," he said, adding that he has had business in all four precincts. "They're just staying home and drawing their checks." Judge Debbie Hayes and County Human Resources Director Donna James would be directed to contact JPs Terry Lang in Precinct 1, Missy Walden in Precinct 2, Sherwood Cupper in Precinct 3, and Eddie Spivey in Precinct 4, and ask them to submit a plan to the court about how they're going to reopen their office after January 1st. Hayes had told Antilly that as elected officials, the JPs are not supervised by the commissioners, but their funding and the pay of their staff members are in the county's purview. "The community has needs, so they need to be available for those needs," she said. A clerk answered Lang's office phone and said Lang was unavailable, while a call to Spivey's office yielded only a recorded message, an email address, and the chance to leave a phone message. Walden told the Odessa American that Antilly's assertions are not totally true because my clerk, Nikki Palmer, has talked to him a couple of times when he needed to file something in one of the other precincts. "Right now, our doors are shut to the public, but if somebody needs to file something, they can email us or leave it in a box outside," Walden said. Nikki had been coming outside if they needed to see us in person, but she is working remotely now because her child is quarantined. The Texas Office of Court Administration got Zoom accounts for all the JPs, but I can't speak for any of the other courts. "I've been doing all my evictions and default injunctions through Zoom, and we are doing our best to make sure and take care of everyone." In a brief response that ended when he hung up, Cupper said he had talked with Keith, and he told me that he had not had a problem with Precinct 3. "So I have no comment other than to say Precinct 3 is not involved," Cupper said. In other business in the court's last regular meeting of the year, Sheriff Mike Griffiths gained approval of specifications for the expected delivery in mid-2021 of 27 new Chevrolet Tahoes for his deputies. "They will be exactly like the Tahoes we have now," the sheriff said just before the meeting. "They'll come with the police package, and we will try to get an outfitter in the locality or the dealership to put in the console and lights. We'll buy the radios and get our IT man, Stephen White, to install them." With the judge and four commissioners wearing lighthearted Santa Claus and Christmas hats, they okayed budget amendments totaling $49,462 to buy furniture and complete the booking area in the recently completed $25 million jail expansion. The court accepted Griffith's recommendation of an intergovernmental agreement with Linn County, south of Lubbock, for Linn County inmates to be housed in the county detention center. It was the last meeting for Precincts 1 and 3 Commissioners Eddie Shelton and Dale Childers, who are leaving office January 1st, and Hayes and Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons expressed the county's appreciation for the men's service. Other business included tabled Public Works Director Evans Kessie's 2020 operational report and his project proposals for the new year. The renewal and ratification of guidelines governing tax abatements in reinvestment and enterprise zones. The approval of Health Department Director Brandy Garcia's request to hire a disease intervention specialist for $17 an hour. The approval of Kessie's plan for the handling of dead animals. The approval of an $8,950 expenditure for work on the historic white pool house's roof. PSP and coalition partner for the first responders. In an effort to reduce vehicle crash fatalities across the Permian Basin, the Permian Road Safety Coalition and the Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, have partnered to provide almost $1.1 million in life-saving equipment to first responders in 22 counties across West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. The partnership with PCP allows PRSC to expand its first responder life-saving equipment initiative that began in early 2020 with PRSC's initial investment of over $250,000 in donated equipment. We are thrilled to partner with the Permian Road Safety Coalition, PRSC, to provide this necessary equipment, said Tracy Bentley, CEO and president of the PSP. Road safety is a critical issue in the Permian Basin, and while we continue to work to reduce incidents through better awareness and improved infrastructure, when incidents do occur, we want to ensure our first responders have the best equipment possible in order to protect our citizens. Based in Midland, the Permian Road Safety Coalition leads a collaborative effort with oil and natural gas operators, oil field service and transportation companies, non-governmental and governmental organizations to improve road safety and reduce the number of traffic-related injuries and deaths in the Permian Basin, the release said. This significant contribution by the Permian Strategic Partnership will help the PRSC place critical emergency response equipment and training in the hands of our region's first responders that will in turn have the potential to save lives on rural county and state roadways in the Permian Basin, said Scott Scheffler, executive director of the PRSC. We are honored to have played a part in this initiative from the start, and we want to thank all of the first responders and local government leaders for their leadership throughout this initiative as we all work together to save lives on our Permian Basin roadways. First responder agencies receiving this equipment are located in the counties of Andrews, Borden, Crane, Culberson, Dawson, Ector, Gaines, Glasscock, Howard, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Reagan, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, Winkler, and Yoakum counties in Texas, and Eddy and Lee counties in New Mexico. Equipment will be distributed throughout 2021. First responding agencies, many of whom are staffed by volunteers, have limited infrastructure and resources that were designed only to respond to local jurisdictions with small populations of less than 10,000. It is not unusual now to see responders travel over an hour by road to respond to calls for assistance. The increase in call volume, coupled with longer response times due to extra miles driven, has the potential to delay. Through this partnering, emergency equipment such as battery-powered jaws of life, medical supply kits, fire extinguishers, mobile lighting tools, and rescue helicopter landing zone kits and related training will be provided to first on-scene local responders or pre-positioned closer to the remote activity areas in need of these resources. This life-saving equipment will give first responders a fighting chance to aid victims and prevent fatalities in otherwise survivable crashes while waiting for additional help to arrive on the scene. Local News Roundup. The Nutcracker. Midland Festival Ballet will present its 27th annual production of The Nutcracker to the big screen with a special produced locally by Film Hunter Media and sponsored by DBAT Permian Basin and the Arts Council of Midland. The Nutcracker Reimagined is a film retelling the story of Clara and the Nutcracker, featuring 50 local dancers and narration by everyone's favorite character, Herr Drosselmeyer. This holiday classic is a treat for all ages. Join the ballet for a fun-filled journey with three options to see the show. Under the Stars at the Big Sky Drive-In, 7:30 p.m., today, Friday. Tickets are $10 for ages 6 and older and free for children 0 to 5. Wear your coziest attire or dress to impress. Stream anytime, anywhere, Sunday through December 31st. Streaming tickets are $30. Watch on Basin PBS at 8:30 p.m. Wednesday. Tickets are available online at www.midlandfestivalballet.org. For more information, call Rachel Kerr Ritter at 818-2615 or email rkerr@midlandfestivalballet.org. Donuts with Santa. Donuts with Santa has been scheduled for 9 a.m. Saturday at the Ector County Coliseum, Barn G, 4201 Andrews Highway. There will be Santa for donuts, shopping, photo opportunities, activities, and more. Santa will be taking photos and greeting guests from 9 a.m. to noon. Masks will be required throughout the entirety of the event. Tickets are available and are very limited. See tinyurl.com/Y2XJEXUN for ticket information. Free food pantry. A free food pantry has been scheduled for anyone needing food assistance starting at 9 a.m. Saturday at Odessa Bible Church, 3901 Pembroke. Participants may be asked to show an ID when they check in. Visit https://wtxfoodbank.org/how-to-get-help/ or tinyurl.com/y7d4z7rc. Traveling Comic Book Store. Kenny's Comics has scheduled a traveling comic book store from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Holiday Inn Express and Suites, 5321 JBS Parkway. Admission is $1 for adults, and kids 12 and under get in free. The admission is also an entry into a raffle for a $50 shopping spree. Drawing is at 3:30 p.m. Saturday. Visit tinyurl.com/yb6AU88F. Dedication to God. Jesus House of Odessa has scheduled an Ector County Dedication to God event from 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Ector County Courthouse Lawn, 119 East 4th. Masks are required and social distancing will be implemented. Even though this is on county property, it is not a political event. It's a group of believers coming together in dedicating our county and our lives to God. Visit tinyurl.com/YAUCUMGW. Drive-Through Parade. The Midland County Sheriff's Office and Midland County Library have scheduled a free drive-through parade from 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday at the Midland County Horseshoe Parking Lot, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. The entrance will be on Garfield, and the exit will be on the service road of the interstate. Participants may stay in their vehicles. Visit tinyurl.com/YA4RKWWR. Nutcracker Stream. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center has scheduled Moscow Ballet's Great Russian Nutcracker Christmas stream on Marquee TV, 7 p.m. Saturday, and will remain available until January 2nd. For more information, visit www.wagnerknoll.com. Free eye exam and glasses. Free eye exams and glasses for children grades 5 through 12 are being offered at 8 a.m. Sunday at Urias Eye Care, 2900 West Loop 250 North, Suite 165B in Midland, behind Abuelo's Restaurant. Family must be at or below poverty line in order to qualify. Limited spots available. Reservations are required. For reservations, text 432-226-0606 or email poolclub@gmail.com. Murray says certification means more opportunity, by Ruth Campbell. The chance for teachers to participate in National Board for Professional Teaching Standards certification, COVID-19 testing, and two early release days were the topics tackled by Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray during his media call Wednesday. Today, the Permian Strategic Partnership made a multi-million-dollar investment into the teachers of ECISD in partnership with the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. This partnership will allow right at 300 teachers in ECISD to undergo the process to become a National Board certified teacher, Murray said. These funds will allow us to provide coaching and mentoring and all the supports that our teachers need to go through that process. The National Board for Professional Teaching Standards has been around now for many years in the United States. They were developed in the late 80s and began certifying teachers in the early 90s, Murray said. He said ECISD has no National Board certified teachers. Murray was certified in the 90s. In Texas, there are about 950 National Board certified teachers and about 150,000 nationwide. It is by far the best professional learning experience that I've ever had in my career, Murray said. It made me a much better teacher and today a much better leader. The certification process, he said, will allow some 300 teachers to improve their skills and hone the good work that they are already doing to do even better work for the students. Along with classroom teachers, counselors, and media specialists can also go for certification. In the spring, Murray said the district will develop a support system for teachers who want to go through the process and identify the teachers who want to take the challenge. This will also give us an opportunity to attract people to our area. ECISD is the only district in the state of Texas to receive this grant from the Permian Strategic Partnership, and we're excited about that, Murray said. We have a chance to create a really unique model of supporting the national board process right here in the city of Odessa and Ector County with our teachers and in partnership with the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. So we'll certainly be able to recruit some of the best teachers around the country to our area. Our hope is that we can begin to draw these teachers here to the city of Odessa, and we can see them as early as August of 2021, he added. Because of House Bill 3 being passed by the Texas legislature in 2019, ECISD teachers who become certified will receive additional compensation of between $3,000 and $9,000 from the state of Texas. We're excited about adding that additional compensation to our teachers who so deserve that additional compensation, especially today with all that they are doing in and amongst the pandemic, Murray said. He noted that research shows the number one factor that increases student achievement is the teacher. Today's investment in the teachers of ECISD will ensure that the students of ECISD win academically, they win socially, and they win emotionally, Murray said. On COVID testing, ECISD was one of the districts that decided to take advantage of the COVID testing provided by the state. The district has started to test its 4,200 employees. If an adult comes to school feeling well, but at some point in the day begins to display some of the symptoms of COVID-19, the rapid tests are available, and they would know within 15 minutes if they are negative or positive. Then we can take appropriate measures as a school system to ensure the safety of our students and the safety of our staff members, Murray said. Already this week, we've had both positive and negative tests each day. When we return from the holiday break, we will continue to provide that opportunity for not only our staff members, but we will then begin offering it to students. So any student pre-K through 12th grade who begins to display COVID-19 symptoms during the school day, we will be able to provide that test to our students along with parent permission. Moms and dads, you have to give permission in order for us to provide that test for your children. It's a pretty non-invasive test. It is a nasal swab, so it's pretty easy to administer. And again, we have those results within 15 minutes. We've had great success with it this week, and we look forward to offering again to students as well as staff members after the holiday break. Marie also mentioned that the school board has approved early release days for February 2nd and March 2nd. Teachers will use the rest of those days for professional development.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.